Good afternoon. Welcome to the latest episode of Robots and Red Tape. I'm Nick. I'm your host, Nick Schutt. Have the fortune to be here with my good friend, Miguel Curiel. Miguel, how you doing today, man?
Doing good, Nick. Thank you so much, and thank you very much for having me. Very excited to be here.
Absolutely, man. I really appreciate you. You taking the time. I know how busy you are. Yeah, man, if you wouldn't mind, would you just kind of tell everybody, a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how you got here?
For sure. I currently do product analytics for a company called MyBundle, focused on making the whole streaming service experience simpler. So a little bit different than the usual guests we have here. So definitely focused on the media and entertainment side of things. Product analytics is a blend of understanding what people do using technology and data. What brought me here, my background is really in psychology. That's my undergraduate degree, but life led me towards the path of research and data analytics. I started early on in my career in market research. That's where I became acquainted with the whole thing of using technology to download data at scale, but then using social science to actually analyze it. In particular, I did, it was a blend of network analysis, downloading social networks and interactions between people, and using social psychology, understanding collective behaviors and how people identify themselves to give recommendations, marketing recommendations to brands. And this just fascinating me. And this is what blends my whole experience with AI and my thesis, social science, or by extension, humanities as a superpower. And I am quoting Rishi Jaitley here, and I'll mention some of his work later on. But anyways, from market research, then went on to data science, data analytics, formerly working with a startup, supply chain risk management company, focused on analyzing supply chain risks, how businesses do business. So a lot of social science focus, understanding how systems work, modeling that risk. And then that led me to my current path, analyzing user behavior within the entertainment and media industry.
Absolutely, man. No, that's fascinating. I appreciate that. And so, out of curiosity, with a social sciences background, that's very different than a lot of people that ended up in like a more traditional AI to data to AI route, right? And into analytics, whether it's somebody with more of a mathematics background, statistics, economics, physics, what have you. How has that social sciences approach and social sciences background changed and influenced your view of analytics, user behavior, and AI?
Yeah, that's a great question and something I think about every day, almost literally, especially with the AI hype going on. How does it influence or affect? It is everything for me. Social science is everything because, or most cases, we shouldn't let AI loose. And in this regard, I very much concur with Erin Underwood, that who you also had on the show, the human in the loop concept. We cannot be go out of the loop. We must always be in, especially for high risk decisions. And in this regard, like how I understand it, and also quoting Erin Underwood, think of the AI currently as a high end intern, someone very wanting and willing to do everything you want. They will say yes to everything, but sometimes they will hallucinate. They will say things that don't make sense. So then you have to think about, okay, what is going behind this? You have to think critically about the outputs. You need to have business domain if what you're asking is a business question. And if you take it a step further, there are several examples where you need to think about the system that is fitting into this. For example, racial bias is very present, unfortunately. So you need to understand the inputs as well. So all this to say, social science in AI for me is everything. And I continue to think about how to best put this on the radar and not be left out of the loop.
Absolutely, 100%. And so what are you, in kind of your background and the places you've worked, what do you think some of the potential consequences of not having a human in the loop would be on either some of the systems you've worked on or, with some of the social networking, social network analytics you've run? How could that go wrong if we didn't have a person like validating, right?
Another great question. So for example, I will refer to again to the concept of risk. There are so and because AI is already embedded in a lot of our day-to-day, like your smartphone has some or several forms of AI.
Yeah, look at the iPhone 16 that's coming out. That's quote AI enabled. I'm not quite sure what that is. I haven't read all about the new iPhone yet, but like, yeah, I mean, everybody wants they want to put an AI in everything now, man. It's like Frank's Red Hot, you know?
And yes, exactly. Couldn't have said it better. And there are cases where, okay, it's innocuous. No, it's not gonna make any harm. For example, bringing the media entertainment stuff, Spotify, your playlist, your smart playlist, very low risk. It will not really matter or affect your health or your vitality if you get your next song is a bad recommendation. And coming from me, who I share Spotify accounts with my partner, odd recommendations are prone to happen. That's okay. I discover new music, very low risk. But think about something different. Making recommendations, business recommendations, something, and without going maybe into many specifics, but imagine your boss. You worked a product technology company. Your boss is asking, "Hey, we're considering launching this new product, this new feature in a given market. Very not necessarily high risk, but it'll cost money at the very least. So yes, a risk for the company. So you need to be very thoughtful of how you approach these decisions. There needs to be a human in the loop, and it goes all the way from what data are you relying on? You need to get some data to feed a model, and you need to understand what data is being fed. Then you need to clean it up, and that is, in the data world, most of the work or a lot of the work revolves around having clean data, and then actually generating the model, which is, I would say, not necessarily the easiest, but the least bulk of the work will be on running the models. It's more so trusting your data. So again, the risk very high for especially certain situations, such as making company decisions, making decisions about health. So it all depends on the situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have a bone to pick with Spotify's AI. I'm sure somebody at Spotify is going to listen to this, but I feel like I listen to I listen to like seven songs, and then they pigeonhole me into like 150 or 200 different songs, as opposed to thinking outside the box more and just helping discover things, because I think that like it can be great for some stuff like that. But I mean, it is a pretty low risk environment in comparison to some other ones, man. So, how, and then, kind of thinking also about just the social background, people are like predictable but unpredictable. How do you take that into account? And I mean, I think like the Spotify example I just gave is a great example. I'm sure that there's a lot of people that only want to listen to those 150 songs and nothing else, right? But like maybe I'm the outlier in this data set, right? Maybe I'm the one that wants more different things. How do you like account for the like inherent unpredictability of humans and how we interact? And like, I mean, you know, like in like emotional states and things like that within analytics and within AI.
Yeah, great. Another great question. So, how do you account? Do you account for behavior? And I'm just taking notes so I don't forget here. For behavior is, we can discuss a little bit about models maybe. Because at the end of the day, you're modeling behavior. No, you're representing part of what you do with variables. So something I will say from a social science perspective, and this is quoting a coworker. All models will be bad, but some will be useful. So that is inherent for social sciences. So how do you account for it? Okay, let's talk about behavior and think about it yourselves. How do you predict what you do next? Someone can maybe deliver and create a model that is very accurate, but oftentimes there are a lot of variables that cannot be captured. So from a data point of view, first of all, you need data, no? Or from a modeling point of view, you need the data. How are you going to get it? Super hard. For example, we work in the streaming services media industry. How are we going to predict what people want to watch next? Super hard to find out. How do you predict what we want to listen to next? Also very hard to predict. But we can have an approach. We can have access to some variables, which will then lead into other conversations about privacy and ethics. But there is usually a way that we can kind of infer, maybe based on, if you know a proximity, a state of where you live in, for a given person user, then you can say, oh, maybe that neighborhood or that place has so and so income, certain age range. So you have you estimate, you use estimates at the end of the day to approximate the best prediction of behavior. But you have to be very mindful, and in general, you cannot predict that far ahead in the future, even for economics models. You only can predict a certain time ahead, or it is recommended, because otherwise it becomes very hard and your data only allows for so much, even if you have a very sophisticated model. Very prime example, pandemic hit. If you were a company like WeWork or something that depended on people being physically present at a place or service, then your models would say, yeah, you're growing, you're skyrocketing. But then hits a pandemic and then your models have to change. That is why, again, you take certain variables, estimate at a certain degree of time frame, but not so much. You have to be revisiting and accounting for external factors and randomness of life, which is super hard and unfortunate, but that is such
Yeah,
as behavior.
absolutely. I mean, the example I immediately thought of when you were describing it is that's why weather forecasts only go out 10 days, right? Once you get out further beyond that, there's too many variables that you're counting on to happen in a certain way for to really accurately predict beyond that. Maybe one day we'll get further beyond that, but not right now. I'm not sure what we would need to do to get there though, and I would guess it would depend on what you're modeling as well. I mean, I know you mentioned like streaming services, things like that. How do you obviously lower on the risk totem pole, right? As opposed to some of these other more higher risk use cases. But how do you approach that watching, what people want to watch next? Because I heard, and I can't vouch for, this being accurate or not, I heard that Netflix years ago, instead of modeling, like they used their existing user data to see, well, if this person liked this show, then and this other person liked this show, person A and person B both like it, and person B likes a different show, then we can recommend that. Are you looking at like your users internally and like creating a profile, like kind of like an avatar type, and modeling them, and then suggesting, like using their data to suggest, like using their data and their watch, like their watch history to suggest more things into that like avatar type?
Yeah, great. Another great question. So kind of summarizing like how to approach what to watch next, how to do it with AI, extremely tricky. And Netflix, I think, is a great example, a great company that has done it pretty neatly. And yes, indeed, it is a mix of individual users, what you watch, but also crowdsourced. So you bring in other users' data to kind of enrich it and have better suggestions. In our case, we also bet on actually not AI, it's your friends. We have an Ask My Friend list feature where you actually create lists on your own, send it to your friends, they vote on what you added, and they can add content to that. So it's
Interesting.
more so entirely user generated because one of our theses is actually that is more effective at generating thoughtful, personalized recommendations than an algorithm. Of course, there can be many other approaches. Netflix really only will recommend content on their platform, no? Then you have other streamers such as Prime Video who may recommend, but then you have to rent or buy. So kind of inconvenient. But that cross-platform experience is still being tackled. We also offer that and have a mix of personalized recommendations and human in the loop without revealing the secret sauce, no? But we do have humans behind the scenes, and basically any AI company will have humans behind the scenes running everything. But yeah, that is one of our a couple of our approaches. But all that to say, it is still extremely tricky and a nut that hasn't been cracked, I would say.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I remember seeing, you remember Amazon had the fresh grocery stores all over, and they had the quote, the AI assisted thing where you just put the thing in the cart and then it would like automatically ring you up and you could just walk out, but it was actually Indian folks in a way in like somewhere in India, I forget. I saw a great joke about when they said AI, they meant actually Indians, but that was just, that was that
It's
made
actually someone in the back end. Yeah.
and you're unable to actually automate it. I would assume that there are some people, but the goal is to minimize them as the algorithm continues to get better and improve. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't speak for other companies.
Well, yeah,
That is a
I'm not
goal
talking
for
to, I know you can't speak to what happened to Amazon specifically, right?
But
But
yeah, that is certainly the goal, and that is where this whole push with AI is certainly headed towards, and poses a great risk, though. Like, are we really sure we want to let AI drive on their own, such as with cars? I doubt it, at least for the foreseeable future. But yeah, I've also heard great conversations going on here and debating otherwise, no, and like my estimate is still further in the future, but also curious about your thoughts if that will happen sooner than later.
I mean, on what time scale? I think that self-driving is, I mean, I think it's a dream, right? That's why Tesla has been selling it for, 10 plus years, that it's always coming, it's always coming. I think that driving is one of the more difficult cases out there just because of, you start talking about outliers in data, right? You mentioned data, and driving is something that has inherently has a lot of edge cases, right? When we're driving, right, somebody slows down in front of you. Are they slowing down because somebody in front of them is slowing down? Is there a red light? Did an animal cross the road? Are they going to turn right? Are they going to change lanes? We're able to, as humans, able to see a more complete picture. And I don't think that full self-driving is anywhere close to being entirely feasible. I think that, like, the one of the best quality of life improvements that I've seen over the last couple years, and not like four, but like over the last decade as it relates to that, is adaptive cruise control, which is great, right? Like, adaptive cruise, where my car, like, I can just put it on cruise control on the highway and it'll speed up and slow down with traffic, which is phenomenal. I'm sure some people use it in like stop and go traffic. I'm certainly not one of them. I don't trust it because I understand that, like, that's not what car companies do specifically. They don't, they're not tech, like, a lot of them aren't technology companies. They're car companies that have technology in them. And I know how easily things can go wrong in a development process.
Yeah, and you bring a great point. Trust is another thing that I don't think I have mentioned thus far, but I agree. One, trusting the robot, no, and having that visibility and transparency, still not there. I would say, like, if you ask ChatGPT, I work with ChatGPT a lot for everything basically, and there is not that visibility into how the outputs are generated. So having that, and something I have thought about, like, oh, recommendations. Yeah, you have Netflix. Sometimes they say kind of why they're suggesting it, like based on similar viewers or based on we think you will like this. Sometimes it's just as generic as that. Why? Explain it to me. That is something that has yet to be, I think, accomplished. And even for something as low risk as recommendations for streaming and music entertainment.
Yeah, I agree. And then, but as we talk a lot about utilizing user data to model other users, right? And to improve internal things, where do, like, ethical and privacy concerns kind of come into play? And how do you, like, not your company, how do you think about that as an individual? And how do you approach that as an individual in your day-to-day? And how can we, balance, and how should organizations, in your opinion, balance that?
Yeah, another great question. How I approach it personally, and both it permeates throughout my professional experience now and work, is if it's consented, and this I will also allude to one of our past speakers here, Brian, who also talked a lot about privacy. No, and it I think I agree with him. I think it's okay to use other people's recommendations to feed into your own and to use your own data if there is consent. And high profile example of where it is not consented, or at least it's a dark pattern, meaning there was no permission asked, LinkedIn, for example, they just had this thing going on where they are training AI using people's content, but they didn't ask for it. So they just turn it on. And right now there's a lot of conversation going on, like, oh, they should have asked first. And now people are saying, like, oh, you have to go here and here to actually deactivate that. That's where it gets very fuzzy, no? And that's just one example. Also, OpenAI has had similar allegations. Where are you getting the data? Is it proprietary? Did you have permission? Most likely for all of it, no, because it is very hard and you're dealing with user-generated content. So sometimes you consent to some things, but who really reads the fine print? No. So all this to say, how I approach it very delicately, I will say I think in the US we are still lagging behind in terms of privacy and regulation, as opposed to maybe Europe, where it is highly regulated. It will trickle down and come here. And I work in product analytics. I analyze user behavior. It is becoming increasingly hard to do that because we cannot always understand what people are doing on our website or a mobile app, for example, because people are opting out. That's just something we have to deal with. And going back to modeling and using estimates and different variables, we will just have to get more creative at how we predict user behavior and understand people. I guess that is the bottom line, being very conscious of people's rights, being also asking yourself, is this something I would want to consent to? Asking others. And ultimately, we will have to get more creative as there will be more regulations. That is what I anticipate.
Yeah, and I mean, I know Europe is absolutely on the forefront of a lot of this stuff. You know, I wonder how we like where's the right, and I'm certainly not like a I'm not even sure what this person would like. I'm not sure how we would go about balancing innovation versus regulation, where that line is. And something I just discussed with somebody, it's an episode that hasn't come out yet, with my buddy Rich Hyman. But Rich and I were talking about that and about the need to balance you know, innovation, right, versus the other side of you know, regulation and kind of where that is. And his whole point was that it's like he thinks it's too soon from a market perspective to regulate too much, right? And like, I don't know if you saw what they did out in California with the regulations. I haven't read up on them, but you know, like I'm just not sure. And do you have thoughts on where you should draw that line?
No, and I also had a time the pleasure of reading some of his material. Great stuff. Very excited to listen into the episode. Where to draw the line? Yes, I think, well, any regulation will take some time. It usually lags. I think we are still, yeah, it's still gonna be a couple of years. And where to draw the line as to maybe when as a company and individual to draw that line? I always try bringing my psychological lens, try to either from a compassion point of view or a empathy point of view, put myself in other people's shoes and what I'm doing. Like, am I okay if other people are analyzing what I'm analyzing? I think also according or concurring with Brian's view, if it is going to enhance, I think this is something he mentioned. If it's going to enhance the experience of your product and by extension the user, I think it is okay, but again, there has to be consent. But for that to be highly regulated, yes, still a couple of years ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Where I agree with you. And where do you see, what are some interesting use cases in for AI or generative AI within your industry? You know, and or how do you have any examples of like success stories as it relates to that?
Yeah, I think as we said, no, AI already embedded in a lot of places, a lot of which are streaming, media, entertainment related. Netflix, prime example of successful. But other novel areas, and I will refer here to Park Associates, who are some of the thought leaders in this area. They recently, like as of 2 weeks ago, launched a white paper and had a webinar on this. All this to say, what they say and see is again, AI already embedded, where it's heading. There is a lot of personalization in terms of ads. And I don't know if you or anyone here listening in has seen this, but I have been getting ever so personalized ads on both my streaming devices and on YouTube, where I spend a lot of time, a lot of product analytics software, and I'm like, how do they know this? I'm certain there is a way, but this ad revenue and ad personalized ad targeting, highly potential area and already being applied. Another one, user generated content, making it easier for people to create content. And in this regard, some may not think of YouTube as a competitor to Netflix, but really they are.
That was a
They have
fact.
YouTube TV, live TV division, but in reality they are competing for attention. No, they want people to spend time watching this or using the service. YouTube TV also does a great, and YouTube overall does a great job of recommending stuff, but also fostering people to create content. And with AI generated tools, they will be able to do it automatically. Another one, an unsuccessful one, I would say, is or so far, live tracking. For example, Prime Video has their X-ray feature where you can pause and see people who are in the frame acting and see the actors. I personally do not engage with that AI. I don't see the value in seeing, oh, frame by frame, who is there? Who is acting on this scene? Personally, there may be users, but
Well then,
also, all this to say, live tracking will be better for sports, for example. That is going to be implemented and having live sports feed and analysis. That's another trend that Park Associates also mentioned, for example.
I'd be interested in seeing the live sports analytics. That'd be pretty cool. But I absolutely find the live tracking that Prime does, where you can pause it and see the actors. That's been very useful because I've absolutely been like, man, I know that actor. Where the hell do I know him from? Who is he? And you just pause and get the name, right? Like that's absolutely like a quality of life feature that's small that you don't think about until it's like, man, who is that guy? I don't even know. And so it's interesting to see though how different companies are utilizing it, or you are implementing things like this and how they're setting up and building UIs associated with it, right? It's really interesting to see the product choices that people are making. And I haven't like gone into my bundle, and kind of I haven't looked at that UI. How do you what kind of UI, are you involved in UI, like UI choices or product choices, like, or design choices like that? And how do you like decide what you think would be good to enhance
Yeah.
the product?
Great question. First, I love that you are a case of where Amazon Prime Video's X-ray feature is successful. Yeah, for me, not valuable. Maybe I'm the outlier. But glad it is useful. How my bundle approaches AI and how I have injection into or inputs into the product choices and development. How I see it a lot of times, how data works in general. No, it's technically on product analytics, but a lot of it is data. What is data if not information to assist business decisions? So a lot of it is, oh, we're thinking about this new feature. Do we have a baseline or something to compare and gauge if there is interest or if it is actually a pain point, something we're solving? I can come up with ideas. Product analytics entails a lot of experimentation or A/B tests. So in the UI, very simple. You want to test the call to action for a streaming service. You want to see if one naming is better than another, or if one color button is better than another. That is the simplest form of A/B testing. There are more complex, but all this to say, we are still a small company. Anyone can bring recommendations. They are assessed collectively and then implemented. But all throughout the way, in whatever way we can or I can assist with data, having baseline, having again this scoping of whether it's a problem or not, or if it's an opportunity, and measuring after. For example, sometimes you can't always test everything, so you just do a rollout of a feature and you want to see if your metric improved, conversion rate per whatever you name it. So you see if before after it improved, then you have to also talk about some modeling decisions, whether because if you do before after, you have to account for seasonality usually. So you have to think about that. But again, all this to say, data, how does it do? How does it and is involved? It is informing business decisions and guiding them.
Absolutely, man. And you know, Miguel, how do you see analytics and you know, by extension AI evolving and changing over the next couple of years?
I see. I will start by saying the human will not be left out of the loop. That is my hope. But it will be assisted heavily by AI. And I can speak for myself. Again, I use ChatGPT daily. A lot of it involves the heavy lifting of data and analytics work, the coding, the tedious. It is very fun for me to code, but it also takes time. I have software that actually does it very efficiently. That's where I think ChatGPT is a great problem solver. But if I ask for research references, that's where it sucks, for example. So how I see it, again, embedded in the workflow, specifically in certain areas. I see it embedded in the coding area. Already we have IBM Watson, we have ChatGPT doing so, we have Copilot, several companies already doing it. I see it in bouncing back again, using this idea also proposed by Erin Underwood of a high-end intern, bouncing back ideas, but never decision maker. What AI will not be able to do is the business context. And this is another idea brought from another author also, Brittany Davis, who is also developing her own product to do this. Use AI, yes, to assist on the analysis. But it is humans who bring the business context, the business sense, the intuition, and the outputs, analyzing it. No, ChatGPT hallucinates a lot. It is not very good at calculations. So you need to make sure it is sound. You need to fact check it.
It's because it's
And
words, not math. But yeah, you know, it's not a math engine, it's a word engine.
it's a word engine. Exactly. So basically, I see it embedded in the middle part. Maybe in cleaning, sometimes that is some of the most tedious work, but I still see it very complicated. That is very nuanced and it is very intimately related to business sense and business logic. So again, that will still be provided in my eyes and in the foreseeable future by humans, as will the output. It's just the middle chunks and the tedious chunks of actually analyzing data.
1,000%, man. No, 1,000%. I think there's absolutely some use cases as it relates to, you know, cleaning data, tagging data. But you know, and I forget who said this. Actually, it's my buddy Chris, Chris Steele. He was one of the first podcast guests, but it wasn't in during the podcast. He and I were talking. He said that he areas where the underlying technology is not good enough to do what it's been trying to do is ripe for AI initially, right? Like a call center, super, like nobody enjoys calling a 1-800 number. No, that's, I've never met anybody that's like, oh, it was a great experience. I'd like to do that again. Like nobody wants to do that, right? Yeah, man, one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, and I'd like your social sciences approach to this or thoughts on this. As we think about AI, right, and the as a tool and what we can apply it to, right? How do you think it'll help us understand human behavior, and not just human behavior at like an individual level, at a societal level, from a societal trends? How do you think that it will enhance or detract from our ability to analyze humans at a at you know at scale?
Ooh, love this. Much more philosophical, societal question. How do I see that? I will equate it and kind of referencing two authors here, Ethan Mollick, who wrote a book called Co-Intelligence. Highly recommend reading it. It is very new. He is a professor at Wharton, has been years and years working with AI and especially on the business and management side of things. This book, something that I took away from it is it's like any other technological advancement. No, think about Industrial Revolution and everything. It makes us reflect on society and what we are doing. Like, if I really want to use AI to implement this, like for example, do I really want to use AI to streamline my coding experience? Heck yes, I do. I'll become more effective, more productive. But do I really want to use AI to create art? I don't think so. And that's some of his proposals. One of it's use AI heavily so you can understand its limitations, so you can reflect on yourself where you don't want it to be involved. And the other author I will also bring, and I mentioned earlier in the call, Rishi Jaitley, who is a OpenAI advisor. He founded a leadership program at Virginia Tech. His whole thing is humanities as a superpower. And I will say that again, what is it that makes us inherently human? Continue to think about that, and there is no absolute answer. But I think it is along the lines of humanities because it's in the name, but also it within the social sciences, like that understanding of behavior, it is so unpredictable. It is There are a lot of variables that AI cannot simply not comprehend because, again, it will lack the context always. It will lack fully understanding the context until we get to the point of very intelligent AI, no? But until that point, which I think we're still far away, it's use heavily. Think of the areas you don't want it to impact because those are which make us inherently human. And I think it goes back to humanities leadership
Yeah,
and social
absolutely.
science. Yep.
Yeah, I think that you bring up an interesting philosophical point, an interesting philosophical question of what inherently makes us human, right? Like, and I think one of the things that I think that's it separates us is our desire and ability to understand the world around us, right? But also, in addition to that, provide commentary on that in a form of art, right? Whether it's writing or drawing or painting or, and that's like whether it's on paper or, on the walls of a cave, right? From 10,000 years ago, it's the same underlying desire. I think that religion is inherently our, when I say our, I mean humanity's first attempt to explain the world around us. What's thunder? Oh, that's just Thor striking his anvil with his hammer. And then you don't need to worry about it because you understand what it is. So I think that the quest and drive for understanding is absolutely one of the things that makes us most inherently human.
Love that. And yes, you can use it. I have used AI to explore deep questions, but it is only an exploration and a commentary and very generic. No, it's, as you said, a text-based recommendation based on likeliness of other responses. But the ability to create something new, even though it will be a mixture of past experiences you've had, past things you've seen, it is still new. It is still you. That ability to think and bring stuff together and try to explain life and explain social issues, I agree. Inherently human. At least I would like to believe so for now and forever.
My man, I appreciate you. Any closing thoughts for us, Miguel?
Well, one question before going to closing thoughts. Going back to the streaming services industry and stepping out of the philosophical world, I would also like to ask you what areas of opportunity or areas do you see where AI could be valuable to you personally?
I think for me personally, the areas that AI is most valuable is like buying my time back, right? I have a lot of things going on. I have a lot of projects that I work on. Time is the most limiting factor, just period, right? Like time and mental attention and the most valuable resource I have, any my most but most value two most valuable resources I have on a daily basis are time and mental brain power to actually do things and get things done, right? And so I think, like, for me, the most valuable things are things that are gonna simple tools that are gonna buy my time back. Like, I mean, I just changed barbers a couple months ago, right? And it's just not AI related, but the last person I was seeing lived 30 minutes from me and took an hour to cut my hair. That's 2 hours out of my day, right? The guy I'm seeing now is 4 minutes from my house and cuts my hair in at most 20 minutes, right? I got an
Mm-hmm.
hour and a half of my time back, and it cost me less money out of my pocket because he's less expensive than the last person. Those are the kind of things that I want, right? Like some of the stuff that I'd love is I'd love to be able to scan a business card for somebody that I meet and have it automatically generate an email saying where I met them. It was great to meet them. Send and hey, read my calendar and then send off like, here's four times I can meet with you next week. Love to chat, right? That buys back time every day, right? How do I get more time in my schedule? How do I become more efficient is 100% what I'm focused on and areas that I think would influence and help me personally, right? I think that like that's absolutely something that'd be great, something where like I use a note, I use like Firefly's note taker, AI note taker, that saves me a lot of time and creates like a I'm not gonna say it creates a record. I know where all my notes are from all my meetings, at least the ones I had virtually, right? Those are absolutely great use cases. Like writing blogs, absolutely more great use cases, right? Like I can it can get me 85% of the way there, right? Which is going to buy back more of my time and give me more opportunity to work in other places, right? I think n not to, I think that one of the things that we need to start having conversations around at a societal level is not about what it can do, but the input demands on creating and maintaining these data centers to provide all this compute power. I literally just saw a couple hours ago that 3 Mile Island, the nuclear power plant, they're that's been shut down since 2019. They're going to reopen that by 2028, and Microsoft will be buying 100% of the power output from it to power data centers, right? And I'm not, I think, like, and like, listen, I'm a proponent of nuclear energy. I think when you look at material utilized versus power output, nuclear power is the most efficient form of power generation that we have as a society. But if they're doing it with the site of the worst nuclear power disaster in US history, how many coal power plants had they spun up as a result? Right? How many? And it's a lot of them, right? There's a lot of power plants that were scheduled to be decommissioned that are 100% coal-based, right? And how is that going to continue to affect society? I mean, and the world, the globe, right? And like, listen, let's be clear. Global warming, climate change is just terrible marketing. It's not, we're not trying to save the planet. Like, the planet's been here for 6 billion years. 100 million years, whatever damage we do to this place ecologically will be gone, and it will have healed itself and recovered. We'll all be dead, though. We'll be extinct. And so when you start thinking about like the and this is these are this is the stuff that I think most people don't think about is like, what are the effects of what we're doing? What are some of the things that the consequences of this, right? And how can this affect our planet in real terms, outside of, oh, hey, I have something that'll, write 85% of a blog for me, because that's great, but I can go back to doing it myself by hand. Not that I want to, but I could. But like, it's not going anywhere. AI is not going anywhere, but I think we need to have some serious talk and thought put into the potential ecological, environmental damage associated with this and the power requirements associated with running all these data centers, and have conversations around increasing the efficiency of these things to reduce the amount of compute power, right? And like somebody like an NVIDIA is just never going to do that because their business is selling chips, and if they make something more efficient and they only have to sell one instead of 100. They have very little, to your point, business interest in doing that. That's my long-winded answer for you, brother.
And I will bounce it back. And no, I love it. These, I will summarize it with, these are the conversations we should be having, and they are 100%, they have 100% to do with humans being in the loop, talking about the social science, the societal impact of it all. And you talked on two levels, no? Like, where do you want AI to impact your life? You talked on the personal level, giving you back time, whatever can make that quicker. Another great example, like something as practical as Google Maps, Waze, you name it, that updates your route to follow the easiest path, the quickest path. Beautiful. Give me back time to produce more, to have more money, to have more whatever. At the end of the day, to have time back and enjoy more. I think that's, again, like, where do we want AI to impact? 100% agree. Make the practical more efficient so we can enjoy other stuff. And then on the societal level, okay, yes, great, let's do that. But what is the cost of it all? I agree. And it is not widely discussed, yes, and goes back to the point of when is it going to be regulated? No, like, I think we're slow and falling behind, and I think worldwide this is not a country level, just it's all the world is just falling behind because it took us by surprise. And to your point, it's gonna come at a cost, and the planet is gonna do well without us. But if we don't talk about it sooner, then it's gonna be dire for us sooner.
Yeah, we've been running on a linear supply chain for thousands of years, right? And our consumption over the last 500 years has increased exponentially, right? When you and it's in conjunction with, I mean, like this is not the first time that we've changed the climate by the scale of industrial operations, the scale of Roman mining operations in Spain. It based on what we can see rose it raised it caused a 1 to 2 degree increase in temperature on Earth at a median, which is impressive, right? But from a level of industrial output that was happening 2,000 years ago. However, when you like the they did very little in comparison to where we are. And I think that there just needs to be a conversation around it. Part of the reason why I'm having why I started Robots at Red Tape is I want to have conversations that people aren't to talk about things that we should be ha talking about. So I appreciate you coming on, man. I've greatly enjoyed our conversation, my guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me, Nick. I'm so happy we got to have this conversation, and I agree. These are the conversations we should have, and it must continue to be talked about. And think about how do we regulate? How do we put in the human in the loop in the AI?
Absolutely, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to Robots and Red Tape, everybody.